nation will fall, and help will be with many advisors. Okay? And the Rabbeinu Yonah says, to guide a nation, it's necessary investigators and people with thought to be careful from all types of pretexts that people want to, in other words, they want to cause harm to you. So they hide things and they try to harm you. And to see the future, to see the consequences and results, so you must see beneath the surface when people are talking to you or saying things, or and see the future of all actions. Because if the enemy becomes intelligent in the manner that that is found in the in their agreement. In other words, if the enemy, before you're able to operate, they find some method of harming you, right? And, okay, so to protect yourself from this type of problem, you must think in strategies through understanding, and he brings a proof for that, And then he says, help comes with many advisors, and he says the help... help from troubles that are very close to danger, because with many ideas you'll find one idea that is correct and that everybody could agree on. When it comes to light, it becomes clear that that is the correct one. So with many many people gathering together to get ideas, you're going to come up with a clear idea. Okay, okay. In other words, the Rabbeinu Yonah says that you must have agreement upon this, because if you have in a dangerous situation, you have different opinions and they can't find agreement, so then these people will, they won't be able to come to any conclusion. They'll be stuck. So they have to have people that are intelligent and are able to give in when they see that they're wrong, until everybody comes to one agreement that this is the right thing, and so therefore that would help to alleviate any type of problem that comes up, an immediate problem that needs immediate attention. What we'd like to say about this pasuk is this, that there are two qualities that the city needs to be successful in a time of emergency. The first thing you need is a person that is a chikrei lev, which we want to say, an investigative heart, means that he understands beneath the surface about human nature and what goes on in the mind of people, so he could read beneath the surface. If somebody says something or they see something, they could read beneath the surface. And they're also roes hanolad. They see the future. They see the consequences of actions. That's the type of person that you need to be successful in a dangerous situation. The second quality that a person, that the city needs, is you must have a group of people. A group of people is, the reason is because insofar as you are not a prophet, you're not a Navi, but you are a Chacham, you can make mistakes. With a group of people discussing the same idea, so you could make, you will make less mistakes, okay? So therefore, you need a group of people, but they all have the qualities that we mentioned above, and therefore they must have the quality of recognizing when they make a mistake and back off, when they made a mistake. They must have that ability, so that the whole group in very quickly could come to a correct point of view of how to deal with this situation that came up suddenly, this dangerous situation, to be able to make a decision for the community as a group. And there shouldn't be strife and disagreement, because if there's strife and disagreement within the group, then you become paralyzed and you can't operate. It becomes very hard to operate. Okay? But if they're all in agreement, then it becomes a simple thing to operate. So therefore, he's saying that you need two qualities for a city to be successful. The opposite of this is if you're lacking any one of these two things, you see, then it's open for failure. Okay? If you're lacking the first one, then there's no chokmah. They can't see the future. They don't understand. They just make decisions as things happen, and they can't make decisions before it happens. So they only make decisions as it happens. And if you have the first group, but they can't come to agreements, they're people that have different battles, and they can't come to agreements, so then they'll be paralyzed. The group will be paralyzed, and they won't be able to come to a decision when they have to make an immediate decision. The question is why it seems to be he's dealing with the city. Why is he dealing with the city? He usually deals with the individual. The answer is that you have to be a chacham in many different situations. Sometimes it's a chacham as an individual, and sometimes you have to be a chacham as a group. And he's telling you how to operate as part of a group. And if you're working in a group, if you're doing for a city, then there's a lot of people that get together to have ideas about what to do. So he's saying what you need is a council of people that have these two qualities. One is they have the wisdom to see beneath the surface and to be able to see things before they happen, and also that they, when they see that they're wrong, they're able to backtrack so that they could all have an agreement at the end of the discussion. The question is why you need a lot of people, because as insofar as you are wise, not a prophet, you can make a mistake. Or there might be a point that you might not think about where somebody else will think. And sometimes in a discussion, sometimes it brings out something that you wouldn't have thought out without the discussion. So therefore, all these things, like when you have a discussion in class, even this discussion over here, it brings out different ideas through the discussion. That's what they do. They just have a discussion. Ra Yerua Ki Orav Zor. It is evil and destructive to be surety for a stranger. The word surety or Orav is to sign where you guarantee somebody's loan. If he defaults on it, then you will pay for it. Then you will pay on it. That's surety. That's Orav. Says it's harmful and destructive. It says Ra, which seems to be evil, and Yeruah is destructive if you give surety to a stranger. Okay? And the second half of the verse says, and he who hates surety, in other words, he doesn't do this at all, if he hates it, he is secure. In other words, you're evil if you give your surety for a stranger, and it is also damaging, okay? And of course, we have to explain why that is, right? That's the Rabbeinu Yonah will explain, okay? The Rabbeinu Yonah says like this. He says, an evil man who will be broken because he gives surety for a stranger. What is the meaning of the word stranger? So the Rabbeinu Yonah says he's a man that he does not recognize, and it has not been established by him. In other words, by the person that's giving surety, it hasn't been established by him the trait of trustworthiness in the person he is writing what he's giving a guarantee for a loan. So he gives that guarantee for the loan. He doesn't know if the guy's going to pay it back. That's what it means, a stranger. It hasn't been proven in his mind that the guy will pay it back. In other words, if you take a loan, so and you fault on the loan, then somebody else will guarantee that he will pay instead of you. That is surety. Then I pay the lender. In other words, if I'm guaranteeing your loan, and you don't pay the loan, I guarantee the lender that I will. Pay back. Now, if the czar, meaning the person that borrowed the money, if he doesn't want to pay the loan, or he doesn't have to pay the loan, then the person that gives the surety will not be saved from one of two problems. One is that the lender will come crying to him, and he'll say, and if the person that gave the surety does not want to give it, so he will be at fault. Okay? Because if he doesn't pay him, so that'd be one problem. If the person that signs it and decides not to pay the surety, so then he's at fault, not the borrower. And added on this is that he will be condemned to be involved in complaints. Talunos and Tarumos is different type of complaints. Or Besdin, the court, will force him to pay, and then he has to go back and complain to the borrower and go to court with him, and it'll come out that what he has acquired, the person that gave surety, is what he has acquired is quarrels. Okay? Modon and Verivo is there as different synonyms for quarrels. And he'll also lose money if the lover cannot pay. Or if the lover is a violent, a ruthless man, he will be in real trouble. Then he can't even go complain because he'll be afraid for his life. Right. And also, it will be disclosed about oneself, meaning the person that gave the surety, that he is if he doesn't pay the loan, they'll come out and lose his good name, that people will know that he's a man of faults, and he doesn't pay unless the court forces him. So he gets a bad name too. Okay? Therefore, the verse says he's evil, and it's destructive if you become surety for a stranger. And he is an evil man. He's called an evil man. Of these that give surety to the stranger. But a good person will not come at so much when he does make surety. A good person, that would be an evil person where he doesn't pay the surety. He guarantees and he doesn't pay the surety. All these problems will come. But a intelligent man, or what he calls a good man, an intelligent man, will not come to this when he gives surety. Why? Because he will come to a conclusion in his own mind from the beginning, when he gives the surety, to pay the borrower without any lawsuit or controversy if the lover does not pay. And he will not quarrel with the lender afterwards, because only on this intention will he enter to surety to begin with. And if not for this, he would not ever give surety to a stranger, because he is a good man. And what is the definition of a good man? He hates quarrels and seeks peace. That is the first half. Okay? Those are the facts, according to the Rabbeinu Yonah, of the first half. Then the second half is, and he who hates surety will be secure. He even goes further from surety, and he says he is not secure with his own wealth. You know what I mean? Because you never know what's going to happen. Whoever hates this trait meaning of getting into quarrels, he will hate because he's afraid that he won't have, even though he makes up in his mind that he'll pay, he still has the fear that maybe he won't have the money when it comes time to pay. Because the loan could be due in 2 years. 2 years, anything could happen. Well, since he hates those that practice this, so he will be careful from this matter, and he'll distance himself and he will not fail in it. But any time that he does not hate this trait, in other words, of quarreling, he is not secure that he will not be fail in this. Because when the borrower persuades him and begs him to give surety, he will not be able to stop or prevent himself to giving this request. And therefore, he stays away from it totally.
Right, we're just going to summarize the facts that we have, okay? According to the Rabbeinu Yonah, there are three types of people. There's one person that gives surety to a person, and he doesn't know if the person will pay or not pay, and he himself doesn't want to pay if the borrower doesn't want to pay, so he doesn't want to pay. So if he doesn't want to pay, so what happens is he's going to get into trouble in a few ways. First of all, so he says that the problem is that the malva is going to come to him, the lender is going to come to him, not to the borrower, because he gave the guarantee on the loan, right? And so therefore, and he doesn't want to pay the loan, so he's going to get into a fight with the lender, right? That's the first thing. And they'll have a quarrel. So either they'll have a quarrel, or Bezdin, the court, will force them to pay. Right? One of those two things. Then he's going to go to argue with the lover to get it back from the borrower. Right? So he comes out, he has two quarrels that he got involved in. One with the lender, and then he has to fight with the borrower. And also he loses money. Right? He loses money. If the borrower doesn't pay, he loses money. Or the malva, it's not clear, either the lender or the borrower, it happens to be a violent man or a ruthless man, so then he's in real trouble. So he's going to have to do something because they could really harm him. And also become known, and it will reveal that this guy doesn't pay his debts, unless Bezdin forces him, so he loses his name. So therefore, he says, it is bad and harmful to be surety for a stranger. By the definition of strange, he means you have not established the fact that the person, that the borrower is an honest person, that he pays his debts. He says, therefore, when you get surety, you should be secure in your own mind. And you take upon yourself that if the person that you are guaranteeing, you will pay the money and not get involved with the lova or the malva, no quarrels. You take on your mind that if the borrower doesn't pay, you will pay the money. That's one. Then the second half of the pasuk is since your own money, nobody's money is absolutely secure. So the best thing is to stay away from lending, to becoming a surety in any case. And don't let you have to be very, very careful not to allow the borrower to persuade you and talk you into, you know, like he gets your emotion of that to do nice, something nice for him. He works on that, so you shouldn't allow that emotion to affect you. The question is like this. In the first statement, the implication is that if you know that the borrower will pay, he's an honest man, then you should give surety. The implication of the second half is you should never give surety. So there seems to be a contradiction between the first half and the second half. But the question is, then should you take a loan? Let's say a person needs money. Should he take a loan altogether? Okay, should he take a loan altogether? I think because the same thing, because you have to pay back the loan. I think this question, if we're going to deal with it at all, we We have to wait till after we have more clarity on what the pasuk is saying about giving surety, and then it could be then we can make the comparison to a loan. Okay? But first we have to understand surety, because that's what the pasuk is talking about, and then later we can make the comparison. We can't make a comparison until you understand clearly the two sides. Many times people make a comparison before they understand. It just looks like they're the same. We're not sure if it is the same or not. So until we define clearly what this verse is saying, only then could we maybe make the comparison to a loan. Okay, but we'll have to wait. It seems at this point that you should be able to make the comparison between giving surety and taking a loan, according to the second half of the verse. That's what it seems to be. So let's wait and see. The question is that we hold that it's a good thing to give a loan. That giving a loan is a good thing, and it's a kind thing. Okay? It's chesed. It's a kindness to do. And definitely, so therefore giving surety to the loan is equal to giving a loan. And that is a kindness, and therefore you should have the quality of kindness. So the question is that why the second verse? Why should you not give any surety at all? Why should you turn away from surety? You should have surety. That should be equal to the to giving a loan. Because without your surety, the person that's lending the money won't give the loan. So therefore, it's an act of kindness. So therefore, the question is how could the verse be going against the whole idea of surety? They're making a similarity like other mitzvahs. Let's say you buy tefillin. Well, you're putting out $1,000 for a good pair of tefillin, maybe you'll need the money tomorrow. You know what I mean? You give tzedakah, maybe you'll need the money tomorrow. In every case, it's all mitzvahs. And so therefore, why surety is a kindness. It's a mitzvah like, it's a commandment like any other commandment. And therefore, and it's a kindness, therefore, you should definitely do it. Okay, the next question is that the Rabbeinu Yonah seems to make a distinction between Ishra and Ishtov, okay, which doesn't seem to be in the Pasuk. The Pasuk seems to only be emphasizing the being surety to a stranger, but not the distinction, and the Rabbeinu Yonah doesn't seem to be making a distinction between a stranger and not a stranger, but he seems to be making a distinction between the Rabbeinu Yonah is making a distinction between a good person and a bad person. A bad person will not pay the loan, and a good person will set up money on the side to make sure he can pay the loan. Okay, there is one idea. Okay, you have to understand that there is two traits of a good person. One is that he avoids arguments at all costs. Two is he's a kind person. And there is a measurement, evaluation that you have to evaluate between your desire to do that which is good and doing that which will bring about a quarrel. The question is, which comes first? The avoidance of quarrels or the desire to do kindness? I think that is the basic problem that the pasuk is dealing with. I'm not saying there's the only two traits of a person. I'm saying there are two traits in a person that sometimes comes in contradiction. That contradiction comes within our verse, okay? And the pasuk is saying, according to Rabbeinu Yonah, you should go to the extreme insofar as quarrels are concerned. The first half of the verse. Is when it says an evil, it says ra. Okay, it starts out with the word evil. Rabbeinu Yonah is interpreting that as an evil person will be destroyed. So the Rabbeinu Yonah from there says that there is a distinction between an evil person and a good person. An evil person will give surety even though he does not have the intent to pay back. And he has a lot of consequences. He will be broken. That's why the second word, Yeruah, means, according to the Metzudas Tzion, to be broken, destroyed. Okay? Like we explained. The good person is, like we said, that we set aside money. We set aside money to make sure, and he sets up in his mind that he will pay the debt, and he might set aside money in the bank, whatever it is, he will do that to make sure he will avoid any type of argument. So what he's going to do, the good person, is he'll never lend, because he knows that he's the person that will pay back, that he will pay back, so he will check out to make sure that he knows, he has established in his mind without a doubt, that the borrower is a person that wants to pay back money. Okay? He has established that fact in his own mind. So therefore, the only time the lova will not pay back is if he just doesn't have the money. Okay? In that case, I could compare that to the eighth level of charity. The eighth level of charity is that I should give a loan to a person. Right? A person in need, I should give a loan, so I shouldn't embarrass him. Okay? There's different levels where I give money. The first seven levels is I give money, and each one is less embarrassing to the person you're giving. The least embarrassing is where I lend the person money. So I give surety, right? That's an act of kindness to a person that's in need of money. I'm willing to write surety or to lend money to that person, either way, but with in mind that I'm not going to go to court, I'm not going, because quarrels to me is the most distasteful. I'm talking about the good person. Is so distasteful to the good person that he will never get into a situation where he's going to get into a quarrel or an argument with any person. He'll never back off. He'll never do that. Practically at all costs. Okay? That is the first half of the verse. By arguments, I mean confrontation, like a fight. I'm not talking about a discussion like you have in class. I'm talking about confrontation over money, or petty things like that. Okay? This is not petty. The guy could lose a lot of money. But he's even willing to lose money to avoid a confrontation. Okay? The second person, the second half of the verse, according to Rabbeinu Yonah, is a person that does not have this trait. He does not hate quarrels to that extent as the first person. And therefore, if he gives surety and then he has to pay, he's going to feel either loss of money, or he's going to feel somebody's taking advantage of him, one of these traits that get you angry and get you involved in a petty type of argument. These are the qualities that get you involved in the petty type of arguments, you see. So it is, the Rabbeinu Yonah is saying that if you are not sure, in other words, if your emotions are such that you're going to get involved in the argument, that you're still at the level where you get involved with the argument, then avoiding confrontation is more important than kindness. In the first half of the pasuk, we're saying you should be kind with chachma if you are a person that hates any type of quarrel or confrontation. Okay? So then the only time you should lend money is if you know the borrower and you know without a doubt that he is trustworthy and he will try to pay. If he can't pay, he can't help himself, so then that's a real kindness that you pay for him. That is a real kindness, and he'd rather pay from his own money than to get into any confrontation. The second half of the verse is talking about a person that his nature is that he still has the old emotions. He doesn't hate quarrels to that extent. that the old emotions will be awakened, and the old emotions of having to pay his own money, or that somebody's taking advantage of him, will take over, and he'll get into a confrontation. So Rabbeinu Yonah says that avoiding confrontation comes prior to a kindness, to giving surety, or to giving a loan. And the thing is, that is what the Rabbeinu Yonah defines as peace. See, that is peace. Peace is going to any extent to avoid a confrontation, unless you cannot help yourself. I mean, there's no way out. You see, there's no way out, and you have to defend yourself. But to all costs, if at all possible, is to avoid a confrontation. That is the, even to the extent that you're not kind to another person. Second half of the pasuk is not a good person. We're not talking about an ishtov. Okay? The Rabbeinu Yonah is putting ishtov in the first half of the verse, because since the verse talks about an ishra, so he distinguishes in the first part of the verse the difference between ishra and ishtov. The second half of the verse is not an ishtov. He, by an ishtov, we mean that he has the trait of peace to such an extent that he'll avoid confrontation at any cost. Unless there's a person that just wants a confrontation, he can't get out of it. There's no way out, you see. So, but if he can get out of a confrontation, he's even willing to lose money. The second half of the pasuk is saying that you should not do kindness if you cannot, if you're going to get into a quarrel. In other words, if you know that you have the trait that you can't tolerate to lose money, or you can't tolerate where somebody takes advantage of you and you're going to start getting angry and you're going to start, fighting with the guy, so then it's better to go to the extreme in avoiding a quarrel and not lend money than to be kind and then to have all these quarrels. But what the pasuk is saying is that many times a person is a kind person, that he feels kind, feels like he likes to help people. Helping people without chachma, without wisdom, is destructive. You can't be kind in a foolish type of way. You must be kind in an intelligent way. You must understand that kindness, by us, kindness is a level of wisdom. It's not just a feeling that you just do it. It must be worked out, and the pasuk is telling you that there's peace, which, and peace means is avoiding an argument at any extent, versus kindness, we're saying avoidance of argument is more important than kindness. Again, the first half of the pasuk. The question is, what does it have to do with the stranger? The answer is, since the good person knows that he will pay and avoid any quarrel, so he realizes he's not going to give out a loan just to anybody because he's just going to lose money. You don't have to be crazy. You understand? If a person needs help, you're not required to do a stupid thing. You're obligated to help a person, but not to destroy yourself. You see? The good person, therefore, has to recognize that who he lends to must be done with wisdom, and therefore he must have established in his own mind, the one that's giving the guarantee must have established in his own mind that he will, that he's going to pay back to avoid any type of argument. So therefore, he's going to deal with a person that that will pay if he can. And all, he knows the person is an honest person, a trustworthy person, and he's not going to just steal from him. He's not going to cheat him. He's not going to take a loan on the purpose of not paying back. He knows the person personally. That is the type of person that he would give a loan to. Now, of course, there's no guarantee, so then he takes that on his mind that he will pay back the loan. You see? The second guy was saying that if he doesn't have that feeling, if he hasn't reached the level of hating a quarrel that much, then he should avoid doing kindness in such a situation where there might be a result that he's going to get into a confrontation with another person. Confrontation, avoidance of confrontation, is a man of peace. In other words, I'll give you an example of avoidance of confrontation. I mean, there's such a thing as road rage. What is road rage? Somebody's driving in front of you, and he's going slow, and you cannot tolerate this. This bothers you, and you cut in and out in such a way that you could hurt yourself, you understand, and you get others angry. The only reason why it doesn't bother you, why road rage is such an easy thing, is because you don't see the anger of the other person, and you cannot, and you don't have an open confrontation. If you know the person and you're sitting down and talking, then you have an open confrontation. You fight with each other. Road rage is, I don't see the other person's rage. I only see my own, and I feel he's taken advantage of me. In other words, like this. Let's say I see a person driving on the left-hand road, and he's driving very slow. So I feel I have the right to be angry with him because he's doing the wrong thing. If you drive slow, you should be driving on the right-hand side of the road, not the left. You see, the truth is, you are right, the person is wrong. But vengeance is not one of the one of our traits that we have, you see. So therefore, you could go around passing, but it should not be in rage. You should be able to go a little faster if you want to, and cut around, but not in such a way of anger and then vengeance and you see, like for instance, many arguments that you have are many over petty, just emotional petty things. That if you just recognize it's only your own emotions that has been hit. Now, if you're a person that really hates quarrels, it means that you will back off if it's not really that there's nothing else you could do. That the situation is that you must get involved in the confrontation. You have no other way. But otherwise, at all costs, your ego, money, whatever possible, you will back off to avoid a confrontation. I mean, the man of peace is a person that he doesn't allow his ego and even money to interfere to get into any fight with anybody. He'll avoid a fight. He'll back off his ego. He'll give in, like, even though somebody insulted him or somebody wants to take away his money, he'll back off. Because he knows that, see, the consequence of a quarrel is that it's a life of not, you understand, there's no peace. In other words, you personally are in conflict. If somebody insults you, so you have to insult them back, so you're in conflict. You're in conflict with your emotions, you're in conflict with the other person, and there's no peace. But a person that the first half of the pasuk is the person, he recognizes that getting to any confrontation with another person is his own emotions are in conflict, and he's in conflict with the other person. The time that it takes away from him in court and in argument, you know, like if you stop to think, you know, let's say, for instance, there's an argument between a husband and wife, right? Now, many times the argument is, you know, you just have a big fight. But many times it's hours upon hours that you don't talk to each other. And each one feels the other one should give in. That breaks up friendships. I mean, there is no peace. In other words, there's no peace to yourself and there's no peace to people around you when you give in to this type of emotion. Therefore, the man of peace is willing to back off for money and not be involved in all these fights. It just takes, he realizes the fights take away from his lifetime. Unless there's no way out, he has no choice. They don't allow that peace. That's something else. Then you have the right to protect yourself. The question is, again, where did we get Ishtov, a good man? The answer is that once the pasuk says there is a bad person, and this is the definition of a bad person, and the second half of the pasuk doesn't tell us what the good person is, so therefore I have a right to make a distinction between a good person and a bad person. So therefore, that is what the Rabbeinu Yonah is doing. He, since the Pasuk is talking about an evil person, what he does, right? Yeah, in other words, he gets surety and he has no intention of paying. So the second, the good person is the very far opposite, that when he gets surety, he makes sure the person, he's in his own mind, he has established that the borrower is a trustworthy person, and only he won't pay back only if he really can't help it. So then he says, so then, okay, then that's like a kindness. So then I will pay back for him, and that's it. I will not get into any quarrel. That is where kindness comes in, you see? But our, so that's where we got the good person. Then the second half is talking about a person that doesn't completely have this trait of peace, peaceful man, to avoid quarrels. So he says that person should go on the extreme of avoiding quarrels by not giving surety and not give in to any emotion of kindness or to any any request and pleas from a person that, you know, you're going to feel sorry for it. You should not give in to that, because avoidance of quarrels comes before kindness. In other words, peace is greater than kindness. Your own inner avoidance of quarrels, okay, is more important than kindness. There are two questions here. One is, what is the subject of the pasuk, of the verse? And two, what are the opposites in the pasuk? Okay? According to Rabbeinu Yonah, there are two sets of opposites and two subjects. The first set of opposites is the evil person and the good person. Okay? The evil person doesn't care about arguments. He's willing... He does crazy things, and then he gets involved in arguments without any thought. The good person is a person that would avoid quarrels at any situation. Okay, so it's how you relate to quarrels. That's one way of looking of a relationship to quarrels. Either you get involved, or you totally avoid it. Okay, is that correct? The difference between the good person and the second half of the verse is that they both want to avoid quarrels, but they're two different levels of the nature of the person. One person is on the level that he hates quarrels to such an extent that he can get into situations where there are quarrels, but yet he'll avoid it. He'll know how to avoid it. Okay? The second person, that trait is not well established in him, so he has to avoid getting into the situation. It's the same thing. Somebody one time asked somebody about what's the difference between the Chafetz Chaim and who he was asking, and the relationship to Lashon Hara. So he says, when the Chafetz Chaim is in a room where they're talking Lashon Hara, he falls asleep. He simply, Lashon Hara is not interesting. You see, he says, me when they're in a room of Lashon Hara, I have to get out. You see, you have to know who you are. There's two types of people. There's a person that has reached a perfection of the soul where, like the difference between Abraham and Noach. Noach could not go to the people. He had to have the people come to him, because if not, he would fail. Abraham used to stand on the roads and go to the people, the evil people, and actually discuss it with him, because he was secure. It's a person, if he still has the conflict, he has to avoid the situation. If he doesn't have the conflict, then he can get in and deal with it. You see? That is the difference between the Ishtov and the person that has to avoid conflict. And again, the first half will say it a little better. The Ish Ra, the evil person, which he doesn't plan to give surety, he's involved in arguments. He is the opposite of both these people. You see? He's the opposite of the Ish Tov and the person that has to avoid all quarrels. because he doesn't care about it. These two people care about it, but they recognize their who and what they are and how they should act based on who and what they are. But the first person just is the first person just doesn't care about quarrels. He'll do it. He doesn't care. He doesn't even think about it. So then the situations of quarrels, and he could lose out. He could have terrible consequences, terrible types of destructions against himself. He just doesn't think, and he gets into all types of fights. Another way Rabbi Weiss wants to put it like this: the difference between the first half of the verse and the second half of the verse is that they both have a problem. They both would get involved. They have still their personal self, where I don't want to lose money and I don't want to be taken advantage of, and these emotions are strong in both. So then the one person doesn't think about it. He still gets involved in it. The other person avoids getting involved in the situation totally. So that's also a distinction. You see, another thing Rabbi Weiss is adding, it's a good point, that the first person, if he knows all the problems that he's going to go into, why does he do it? Because he thinks it's a good thing. He sides on the... In other words, if you're an evil person, that would be totally... the Pasuk is not even talking about that. What it's talking about, that we're talking about an evil person, means that he says kindness of avoidance of quarrels over kindness. Then now the Pasuk becomes very clear, the first half of the Pasuk and the second half of the Pasuk, they don't even mention the Ish Tov. Okay? Why the Pasuk doesn't mention the Ish Tov? Because we're talking about a person that's in conflict, and which one comes first, kindness or avoidance of quarrels? Okay? And we're saying the first guy chose kindness over avoidance of quarrels, and the second half chose avoidance of quarrels over kindness. The Rabbeinu Yonah says that is the correct way of going. We're up to chapter 11, verse 16, and it says, a woman of grace obtains honor, and the powerful obtain wealth. Now, the Rabbeinu Yonah explains what it means by a powerful person. He says there are people that place terror in the land of the living, and they are called Aritzim, powerful. And he brings the proof. Okay? And then he says their only desire is to depend on greatness through wealth and multiplying money, because with their strength to give terror, and they love the fact that people are afraid of them, and they terrorize them through harming them, and through in other words, they obtain the honor through terrorizing them, and they want that more than the love of honor and the respect in the eyes of the people. Okay? In other words, they don't care about the respect of the people. They want them to fear them. That's the main thing. Up until the point, they go so far that they do not do any type of charity or kindness. Also, their eyes, meaning their desire, is for violence and oppression or exploitation to multiply their wealth. And this group of people are making a terrible error, because they think that honor is that when people fear them because of the way they terrorize them with their wealth. And they don't realize that honor is reached by correct actions and good practices and a lowly spirit. A lowly spirit means humility. Okay? because it's only these people that are loved and accepted by the public, by the people, and they are considered to be esteemed and respected in their eyes. In other words, this what we call the Neshes Chayim, a woman of grace, right? They are the ones that are accepted in their eyes. And they look towards the... The wicked in their wickedness, in the wickedness of their heart, they blind their eyes. And that brings them, this blindness brings them to consider that that wickedness and terror is the way to choose, and that is that's the essence of their honor. And they quote a verse in Tillim, and the ways of the wicked will be lost. Okay. And the question is, why a woman of grace? So he says, he gives an answer. He says, and you can give a reason for this, why it mentions a woman of grace, and it doesn't say a man of grace. And it says, perhaps he wants to teach us, the verse wants to, King Solomon wants to teach us, that the powerful, if he is the husband of a woman of grace, he will not let her obtain the honor and to practice correctly also with the work of her hands. I assume by the work of her hands means her acts of kindness. But anyway, that's what he says. The understanding of that will leave till we totally understand the pasuk. It doesn't make any sense at all what he's saying there. But anyway, so we'll have to leave it till the end of the verse, till we analyze the whole pasuk and see what the pasuk is saying. Maybe then through the discussion we could understand what he's saying, why it uses a woman of grace and not a man of grace. The first question is, what is a woman of grace? What does grace mean? Okay, that's the first question. Right, there's nothing wrong in acquiring wealth. There's two different motives. One is, wealth is a practical thing. You need money to live, and if you have money, it becomes easy to live. You understand? There's nothing wrong in that. What we're against is that you use the money to terrorize people, and that they should be afraid of you, and you enjoy the fact that they're afraid of you, and you think that this is honor. The question is, what does the first half and the second half have to do with each other? It doesn't seem like it's a clear-cut comparison. Okay. The essence of what he's saying is that they're blinded by that fact. They're blinded by their desire for terror and power and to control people, the ability to control people, that they think that is the real honor. And the verse is telling us, no, that is not the real honor. So according to this pasuk, you have to ask the question, what is honor? I mean, if a person wants honor, let's say he wants it through terrorizing, so that's his desire. Right? So what is his definition? He seems to have a definition of honor that is the correct definition, and he says any other definition of honor is incorrect. So we have to get that definition of honor and see why that is correct, and see why the other definition, why the powerful man's definition of honor is incorrect, and it's only based on a certain blindness. The Rabbeinu Yonah very clearly defines what the powerful is. Okay, it's a person that wants he wants honor, and he enjoys when people are frightened of him. That's what he considers honor. When people are frightened of him, and he has control of these people, that's very clear what a oritz or a powerful person is. The next question that we have to deal with is, what is grace? And that he also seems to point to, because he says, and these people don't know that honor is reached by correct actions, by good practices, and humility. Okay? I think those three traits we have. He's explaining that this is the real honor, which is the first half of the verse. So we have to define those three traits. He says once again, the Rabbeinu Yonah says that that they don't know that honor means the way to obtain honor, which would also define the grace, is correct actions, good practices, and humility. He says shiflus haruach, a broken spirit, which is a way of saying humility. We're quantifying the three traits. One is correct actions means whenever you have a decision to make, he knows how to make correct decisions. He studied the Mishlei, Proverbs, and he knows how to make good decisions. Okay, that's good. The second one is good practices, which means that well, you don't have to make decisions, you just operate in a certain manner. Yeah, now, the question is, what is that practice? Well, in other words, could you describe that type of person? Alright, Thomas wants to say that it's the way you act where you don't have to make decisions, your habits and the way you just operate, your personality, without making decisions, the way you talk to people, the way you speak to people. Okay? That's good. Okay, that's good practices. And what is humility? Humility is where you do not, in other words, the importance of the self, there's no importance of the self. Now, most, practically all negative traits, I think all negative traits, stem from the ego. What's important to me, and I can't overlook anything that's important to me. So humility is that the self is not there, and therefore there's a certain I could really do for others and listen to others, and really, in other words, the last part, the humility, is the cause for the first two traits, I would say. In other words, the just actions, where you do correct actions, you make decisions based on kindness, of course you could do for others because there's no conflict with the other person, right? Because conflict comes when my ego is against your ego, right? So therefore he has no ego, so whenever he makes decisions about correct actions, it's always what is just and kind, what is correct. And the humility brings about the way he operates in a very quiet and peaceful way, not showy, he doesn't awaken any type of conflict with others the way he acts. It's a very plain, simple way. Okay? And also, we know a certain principle that one unconscious reads another unconscious. Therefore, when you meet a person that doesn't have any conflict with you, even if he doesn't act it out, but you don't sense that conflict when you're with the person, you say, you sense it. You sense that. Even if he doesn't do anything, you pick it up with small little details, unconsciously you read it. That you're not in conflict, you see, and that's why you're drawn to such a person. That's why that is what I'm defining as grace. Grace is a personality that there is no conflict, so therefore there's nothing, since there's nothing against, so it's all positive. Anything that you have in relation to them is positive to relate to them. Now the thing is, so we have two definitions of honor. One definition of honor, people being afraid of you, and the other definition of honor is based on your personality, people are drawn to you. Okay? Now we have to prove, according to Rabbeinu Yonah, that one is a real honor, and one is the people are really faking themselves out. Well, once again, the problem is like this. We have two definitions of honor. Okay? Now, the Rabbeinu Yonah seems to hold that one is correct honor, and the other one is the reason why they think it's honor is because they're blinded by their own emotions. Okay? Now, the question is, well, look, if I have a different definition than you, you have the right to have a definition. They have the right to have a definition. But the only thing is that if I hold that you're wrong, then I must show you that there's a contradiction or there's something wrong in your definition. So the Rabbeinu Yonah is saying that the definition of honor of the powerful person is an incorrect definition. It leads to something wrong. Okay? So we have to find out what's wrong with that definition of honor. That is, when you look up to me in fear, I consider that honor. You are afraid of me, and you won't say anything to my face, and you'll act according to the way I want, because out of your fear, I call that honor. What's wrong with that? Why do you say that's wrong? That is, if you want to say there are two types of honor, you might say there's one that's a good type of honor, one is a bad type of honor. But that's not what the Rabbeinu Yonah is saying. He's saying they're making a terrible mistake. That is not honor. So therefore, I have to define honor in such a way that it excludes the definition of honor by the powerful person, because it doesn't make sense. And you clearly see that he's blinded by this information. He thinks it's honor, when in reality it's not really honor. In other words, even if you want to say there's good honor and bad honor, fine. But Rabbeinu Yonah is saying they're making a mistake. This is not honor. You see? You can't just say, there's two types of honor. There's good honor and bad honor. That's what the Rabbeinu Yonah said. That's it, so that'd be fine. But that's not what the Rabbeinu Yonah is saying. He's saying, by definition, this is not honor. Now, where does he see that? Honor is where you look up to me, okay? You look up to me, respect me, right? So therefore, I could get respect either through fear, or I could get respect through where you like me. But that's honor. I'm still being honored by people. You might say that two causes, one is not a good cause for honor. One is a correct cause for honor. Fine, but you can't say it's not honor. They are honoring. Honor is where there is something about you that attracts people to you. This is not there's something about you, it's about the person that's afraid of you. In other words, when I am afraid of you, so I don't honor you, I have to subjugate myself to you and act in an honorable way, but it has nothing to do with you. It has to do with me, my fear. It has to do with self-preservation. Right. You see? It has nothing to do with you. Honor should have to do with the person that's receiving the honor. There's something in the nature of the person that he deserves the honor. You see? But if I'm giving you the honor not because of something within you, but I'm giving you the honor because of something within me, so then that's not real honor. That's not honor. Just a fake act. You see what I mean? That's why he's saying that they fake themselves out. They think they're getting honor. But these people don't even think of him. On the contrary, 2 minutes after, if they had the power, they would put him down. With Saddam Hussein, they pulled down the statue. You know what I mean? They couldn't wait to pull down the statue. There was nothing in relationship to the person. You see? It was only themselves. But in the woman of grace, you see, there's something about her that draws you to her. That quality that you don't feel any conflict from her, because she doesn't have an ego. She doesn't have that quality that brings out traits, those negative type of traits, those antisocial type of traits. She doesn't have that. So therefore you're drawn to that person because of the person, not because of your needs. The question is, why do we always ask what are the opposites, what are the comparisons, what's the subject? And that is the question. In other words, a general question of the way we're approaching Mishlei. Okay? In all the previous tapes of Mishlei, basically we took certain ideas
and we use the ideas to apply to our life. That's the way we dealt with Mishlei and with Musa in general. Okay? But we're doing something different now. What we're doing now is a certain training of the mind how to think so that your mind thinks in a certain way. What we're doing is we're taking the pasuk, the verse, as a postulate. And deducing from the postulate, we're trying to deduce the concept that King Solomon is trying to get across to us. Okay? Now, a definition in logic. See, if you look up Mr. Webster, his definition is always a synonym. He gives you synonyms that somehow you know. There are a lot of words that you use, if I ask you what it means, you would be, you know, everybody knows that word, you know? But a definition logically means comparison. You must have a two opposites and the subject of the opposites. That is a definition. Everybody knows what hot, warm, and cold is. But if I ask you, well, what is it? You see, you're going to have to define there's different levels of temperature. You see? That's really the concept. The concept is you have So therefore, the definition, and that's why if you look at King Solomon, the way he set up the verses, he always set it up in opposites. And every opposite must have a subject, and when you have it down, that is the final picture of the whole conversation that we have. We have the clear definition of what King Solomon is getting at. So let's experiment here and see how it works. The question is, what are the opposites here? What is the subject? What is the subject? Now that we've discussed all the particulars of the verse, the question is, what is the subject of this person? See, the subject is honor. Honor. And there's two views of honor. One is a correct view of honor, and one is an incorrect view based on your false view of life. You see? So therefore, the pasuk is defining, the verse is defining, two views of honor. One is a correct view of honor, and one is an incorrect view of honor, an incorrect definition of honor. Okay? That's the final view of the pasuk. That's everything we did till now. In other words, now if we want to explain it, we would say, yes, there are two types of honor. There's the correct, which is the first half of the pasuk, and that's based on your personality. And the second half is a wrong view because it's based on the personality of the person that's giving you honor. It has nothing to do with you. He's only interested in protecting himself. So it's an incorrect view of honor. So we have two views of honor, one correct and one incorrect. The verse is not talking about dishonor, so let's leave dishonor out. I mean, in other words, all we're talking about is that there are two views of honor, one correct and one incorrect. That's what the verse is talking about. That's the opposite. The correct view and the incorrect view of honor. We're not defining dishonor. Now the question is, if we're talking about honor, the verse is, the question is, why does it say, see the first half, the question is, why does it say the powerful will obtain wealth? Okay? Right. Now, the question is like this. Are we dealing with wealth or the obtaining of wealth? So then the question is on the first half, why does it say the woman of grace obtains honor? So we have a contradiction between the first half and the second half of the verse. Is that correct? So therefore what we're saying is that the reason why the powerful obtain wealth is to get honor. In that way, if you add that one statement, then the whole thing becomes clear. Then it becomes a good comparison, and that's the way we have our subject and the two types of our subject. In other words, you can't have it both ways. You could either have obtaining of wealth or obtaining of honor, which is a contradiction. That's what Laura asked at the beginning. She said that there's no comparison between the two. Because one half of the verse is looking for honor,
And one person is looking for wealth. So therefore, the two verses have nothing to do, the two sides of the verse have nothing to do with each other. Therefore, what the Rabbeinu Yonah says is that he the desire, the powerful person obtains wealth for the purpose of honor. For the purpose of honor. And the way he gets honor is by making people afraid of him. In other words, the King Solomon used the term wealth, but from the first half of the verse we see the wealth is a means to get people to be afraid of him and to have the ability to control and terrorize people. That is the purpose of the wealth. There is a correct purpose of wealth. Now the question is, why does it in particular use a woman of grace and not a man of grace? Because in truth, I mean, it could be either man or woman. Okay? So the Rabbeinu Yonah seems to say like this. He's saying that there are situations that a person could have the quality to acquire real honor. They have the personality to acquire real honor. But however, they could be in a situation where that honor cannot come through. In other words, practically, they will not get the honor. Why? Because if you're a woman of grace, see? So he says, why not a man? Because a woman can be, let's say she's married to a man that wants power. Let's say, for instance, Rachel, right? So Eliezer came to get Rachel, and she had all these qualities, right? That was the test. Let's say she didn't meet Yitzchak, and this situation didn't come up. She would have married a man from the city. The man from the city would have been a man that's interested in this type of thing. He's interested in power and money and control. That was the whole thing there, right? That was the city. So you see that in that type of situation, it was Rivka, not Rachel, you're right. Okay? So therefore, in that situation, you can have the quality of that you would attract people to you based on your personality, but it's not going to happen because there can be a situation where it could affect you in such a way that you will not be able to bring out that personality. And the reason why they use women, because women can, especially in those societies, they're basically controlled by the man. So therefore, since she was in a situation of being controlled according to the society, so there is, based on society, they could stop her. You know what I mean? The man of power, if he married a woman of grace, would control her from doing all these nice actions and all these things, so she wouldn't get the honor even though she has the personality. That's what it seems that the Rabbeinu Yonah is saying, that sometimes you could have this quality, but for a certain situation it will not show up. The reason why we don't like this interpretation is because it doesn't help us at all in understanding the verse at all. Okay? But, I mean, it's like a side point. It's like a side point. It doesn't help us with our definition of honor. Does not help or detract from the definition of honor. It's just saying, I mean, it seems to be saying that sometimes you might see a person that is not honored and they have the quality, so you might ask the question, so why aren't they honored? Why don't they get the honor? So we're saying there's certain situations that could stop it from happening. Okay, we're still chapter 11, verse 17. And the verse says, he who does for his body is a man of kindness, and he who afflicts his flesh is cruel. And once again, he who does for his body is a kind person, and he who afflicts his flesh is a cruel person. Okay. Now, the Rabbeinu Yonah explains it like this. He says, a man of kindness is a person who augments or adds to his body with good habits and traits that are in between traits. It's down the center. In other words, there's no one trait that pulls to the one side over the other. I'd like to explain this for just 1 minute. All traits there are in opposites, okay? But all the traits that are in opposites is based on two basic opposites. There is the animalistic of the human person and the conscience, okay? Now, if one side is stronger than the other, so then you will be pulled to one side over the other. Therefore, the healthy person is down the middle where rationale could dictate which way you should act. But if you pull to one side of this equation, so then you can't think straight in those areas. So at this point, we're talking about taking care of your body. Okay? Then he says, and the mida of the trait of being down the center, insofar as the for the betterment or for the good of the body, is that a person should act with kindness to differentiate or to separate his body from pleasures and to satisfy his needs only insofar as the existence of the body. The second half of the verse, and he who flits his flesh is cruel, says, he who flits his flesh, what does it mean? He fasts, or he starves himself, okay? He's called cruel. Misagev is either starve or afflict. Okay. So he's called cruel, like you call a person that's cruel that does evil to somebody outside, to somebody else. If, in other words, if he forced somebody not to eat, or he afflicts him in any way, he'd be called cruel. So you're called cruel when you also do for yourself, because afflicting the body, you lose the strength of the body, and you and that destroys anything you have to do, and you will not be successful in wisdom and for the service of God. This is the first answer of the Rav Eniona. First, the question is that when he talks about the afflicting his body, he talks about fasting, right? And then later, earlier when he talks about the person that's kind to himself, he says he does not have the pleasures, which seems to be the desires, right? Extreme desires he talks about. And then, now he's not talking about desires, but he's talking about afflictions, like an aesthetic. So the question is, why does he change the example from taiva to, from desire to harming yourself. There is another question. The question is like this. When you say kind, and he says that it's equal to doing harm to somebody else, there are two possibilities in this. One possibility is that you are a human being, and you're obligated to be kind to yourself, just like you're kind to other people. And if you're not kind to yourself, that being unkind to a certain person. So which means you're not kind. This means you're a cruel person. If you harm yourself, you should be at least equal to the rest of society. So if you're harmful to yourself, so that is a cruel person, because you're harmful to yourself, because you are one of society. That is one possibility that he could be saying. Or he could be saying another possibility. And that is that when you harm yourself, person, when he harms himself, his motive is not to harm, but he sees some type of benefit in it. And he goes, because of extreme emotions, he sees benefit in things that harm himself. You see? Now, if you see that, if you understand that as being a good, then you cannot, by definition, be kind to anybody else, because that's what you're going to try to get do to other people. Because that is your philosophy. In other words, the first thing is, I'm tough on myself. Okay? I'm not kind to myself. I might be kind to you, but I'm not kind to myself. So we call you a non-kind person because you are not kind to somebody in the human race. You're vicious to somebody in the human race, namely yourself. Like a person with a bad self-image. He'll be cruel to himself, but he'll be nice to others. Right? That's the first possibility. The second possibility, what I hold being cruel, I hold that's a good. Because what I'm doing to myself, I hold it's a good. These type of things must have some benefit. Right? So there, it's true I might be mistaken, but I hold it's a good. And since I hold it's a good, so I don't know what the real good is. If I don't know what the real good is, it's impossible for me to be kind to somebody else. So somebody who does not know the real good cannot be kind to somebody else. So I don't know which way the Rabbeinu Yonah is learning kindness. In other words, a person like a Nazi or Hitler, he will torment others and not himself. We're not talking about such a person. We're talking about a person that has a certain idea of kindness. But kindness is to do good for the others. The only thing is he has the wrong idea of what kindness is, and he does harm to, he does kindness to himself in an incorrect manner, in a manner that's really harmful. You see? We're not talking about a Nazi that he hurts others, does something to others different than himself. I'm saying this person will do for himself and do for others the same thing. You see? So the thing is, he really thinks it's a good. But that guy, even though he thinks it's a good, in reality, it's cruelty. He's being cruel. So if you're cruel to yourself, therefore you are a cruel person. If you afflict yourself, you are a cruel person. If you take care of yourself, then you at least know what kindness is, so therefore you can be kind to others. And the question is, in the first possibility, they want to ask that, according to the first possibility, it can never happen, because since he thinks it's a good, if anything you do for yourself, you think it's a good. So you must hold that it's not good you must hold that it's good for everybody, right? So therefore you can't be kind to everybody. So he's saying the first possibility doesn't exist. What Rabbi Weiss is trying to explain is that no, it's irrelevant. We're not discussing how he relates to anybody else. What we are doing is we are just saying that if he is vicious to himself, that is an act of viciousness. That is a cruel person because he's acting vicious to a particular person. How he acts to others, we do not care. That's not part of the problem. But the second possibility is that, in other words, both possibilities are true. We don't know which way the Rabbeinu Yonah is going. In other words, to explain the two possibilities, Rabbi Weiss said that we're defining, in other words, what is an officer. Is an officer, is once he is an officer to himself, that is defined. Avza means cruel, okay? Avza means cruel. So that he's cruel to himself, that already defines him as a cruel person? Or no, only when he afflicts others is he cruel. So according to the first answer, once you're cruel to yourself, so then you are a cruel person. According to the second answer, if you are cruel to yourself, by definition, you're going to be cruel to others, so therefore you're called a cruel person. So when are you called cruel? When you do it to yourself, or when you do it or because it affects others? That's all. That's all the difference is. Okay? The question is the Rabbeinu Yonah deals with the extremes. The question is, why does he talk about the extremes, especially on the side of kindness, the kind person that takes care of himself? He talks about the being in between and not extreme. Okay. The question is, why does he bring it up in this situation? There are two things in harming yourself. One is, in other words, harm. Whenever you harm yourself, you, by definition, is going to an extreme. Why? Because the thing is, there are certain things that are beneficial to the body. Okay? So, let's say exercise is beneficial to the body. But if you overdo it, you go into these extreme sports, so you destroy the body. It's extremes that do harm to the person. You see? It's good to save money. But if you're a miser and you can't, or you're stingy and you can't spend money, that's an extreme, you see? So the thing is that, in other words, reality is the middle point. Reality, it just tells you what is best for this organism. Now, if you go to any extreme in relating to this organism, then it is harmful to the organism. You must do exactly what's good for the organism. Now, the cause of extremes is the emotions, if the emotion is drawn to one extreme over the other. So therefore, when he talks about good traits, he's talking about good practices. He's talking about good practices. Then he's talking about the practices of doing correct actions. When he talks about the traits, he's talking about the causes of the either good actions or the bad actions. An addiction means where there's one trait pulling you to one end and to an extreme where that extreme is harmful to you. You see? So therefore, he says the kind person looks at reality. And insofar as this subject is concerned, namely with the physical body, he sees exactly what is good for the physical body, and that's what he does. He doesn't do more. Okay? If you happen to enjoy exercise and you want to do a little more, that's fine. For the enjoyment, you might want to do a little more, but you have to be careful not to go to an extreme where you're going to harm yourself. You see, to too much, to an extreme. So therefore, that's what he's saying. You have to look at reality. The person that's addicted cannot look at reality correctly. So in our subject, what's happening is the Rabbeinu Yonah is explaining that you must do correct actions. Correct actions means know what is necessary for the benefit of the body. Okay? But however, if you have some emotion that draws you to overdo or to go to an extreme, so then that would be cruel. You're being cruel to yourself. You're harming yourself. You're destroying your body. That's being cruel. Destroying a body is cruel. And if you do it to yourself, that's a cruel act. All I can say about Rabbi Weiss's question about what he said, I don't know why he mentions his question was that in the first half we're talking about kindness, he talks about that you shouldn't have addictions. That's taiva. The word taiva means addictions. And to just satisfy your needs. Second half, he goes into the other extreme where you fast. Where you arm yourself, you fast. I don't know why he mentions one by the other, but all I can say is that it doesn't matter which side the extreme is. If the extreme is you do more, it's because, let's say, you're addicted to sweets, you're addicted to food, you're over-addicted to exercise, any type of an addiction that way is harmful. On the other hand, if you starve yourself and you take away sleep from yourself, you try to drive yourself where you don't have enough sleep and you don't have enough food, and so that's also harmful. So either extreme, is harmful. But why he mentions the addictions, the positive addictions, like pleasures and things like that in one place, and the fasting in the other, I don't know. It could be that maybe Rabbeinu Yonah in the second half says, because certain uses fasting, because there's certain people that hold that it's a relationship to God where you give up of the physical, that you should give up of the physical. So therefore, he mentions that at that point, that even if it's for religious reasons, where you want to give up the physical for the because you feel that gets you closer to God, you cannot do that unless the halacha demands, like fasting, like we have fast days. But however, the thing is, insofar as halacha is concerned, insofar as beyond the halacha, you don't have the right to say, I'm going to torture myself. The Masil Shisharim also says about people that used to dunk themselves in the winter in the icy waters, and they felt that was a religious act. And he comes out very strongly against that. The Rabbi Weiss wants to define the pasuk like this. He wants to say that there are the definition of kindness is that you are kind so as to help a person come to perfection. And that fits in very well with the Rabbeinu Yonah, because he says, because if you don't take care of your body, you will not be successful in wisdom and of serving God. Okay? So therefore, you see, kindness is only for the purpose, it's not just to be kind, but it's for the purpose of helping a person perfect their soul. Okay? Now, many times a person has an incorrect view of perfection of the soul. And therefore, like we said before, he'll fast, or he'll do things to harm his body, because he thinks that is the perfection of the soul, you see. And the Rabbeinu Yonah says that is incorrect, and he's really being mean, he's being cruel, because of his incorrect view of what is perfection. He is being cruel to himself. So therefore, that is a cruel person. But however, the other person recognizes that the true value is in knowledge, studying Torah, having knowledge of God. For that, you have to have a healthy body. So to have a healthy body, to be able to think clearly, you must do everything that way which is necessary for the body. That is true kindness. And that's the comparison in the Rabbeinu Yonah, where he compares it to harming other people, that if you harm yourself, it's like harming other people, because kindness, the definition of kindness, is to help people, to help them perfect their soul, and that's also for yourself, that you should also help yourself to perfect your soul. And you need